Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm having a good time with my man, Larry Wilmore, the host of Black on the Air. You know him for his work on Blackish, The Fresh Prince, certainly
Comedy Mac Show.
Oh, my gosh.
The Nightly Show, The Daily Show, The Office.
That's right. The Office. People. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot.
This brother's been working. He's been working.
Insecure.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So we had exciting news. I was really excited when the word hit the street that Jon Stewart was coming back at least once a week to The Daily Show. On Comedy Central. I even did a little spoof with the Muppet and just asking the question, well, maybe we'll see the Muppet again. Who knows? Maybe the Muppet will come back. And the little Muppet did a little cameo. It was a lot of fun. But it is amazing how John has hit the ground running and sort of real, just like before he left and now in this moment, putting his finger on where the pulse is for a lot of folks. First off, what are your thoughts about John's coming back? Do you think this, what he will bring, will help us along with some others out there to sort of contextualize the cultural political moment right now?
I think it's great seeing John again. I mean, he really made that show what it is and influenced so many others, including myself, you know, doing that. He also influenced a lot of people in traditional media who kind of adopted little things that The Daily Show did back in the day on their own programs and format and that kind of stuff, you know. I caught first two. It looks like he's having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It looks like he's very happy that he's back. And this is, you know, who does it better than Jon Stewart? So if there ever was a time to come back and do it, this election year is probably the time. So I'm happy to see him back.
Yeah, the response has been strong and it's been fun to just sort of, I think it's in one sense, and it, you know, it's obviously not a slight on anyone else who hosts the show or anything like that. But when you laugh with him, you kind of laugh differently. And at least that's how I feel. And just in terms of the sort of the cultural piece that he brings directly to the screen, you know, writers like yourself are writing incredibly good scripts that, you know, in a lot of cases, other people are saying, unless, you know, at times when you've had your own show and doing your thing, you have that same opportunity as well. When you're in that position, when you can more directly say the words yourself, as opposed to writing them for others, it sort of has a different feel, right? Or not?
Absolutely. And John is the best at that. If you ever have a chance to see how he puts a show together, he's so friggin' smart, Michael.
Yeah.
And he has such a good sense of what is the journey of this story, not just jokes. You know, we all have the ability to write jokes because it's what we do for a living, you know, and you put us in any room, we can come up with jokes for something. Mm-hmm. But jokes is not what John's going after. It's point of view. You know, what is my take? And what is the journey I'm going to take you on for this take, with humor here, that type of stuff? And where do I want you at the end of this? You know, you got to, and doing that every day. Now he does it once a week. But having to do that every day, and many times you'll go through the day and you're not even sure what your take is until after rehearsal, and you go, oh, okay, I get it.
Right. What I want
to
go. Right?
Oh, exactly. And then you have like 20 minutes to get this thing right in the rewrite room, you know, and figure it out. And there's nobody better at John than figuring out a take, you know? And right. I think what a lot of people confuse with what that show is I think many times they critique it because they don't agree with John. You know, and I'm like, well, that's not a basis for critique. That's a basis for agreement, you know? So I can't believe he said this about that. All right, motherfucker, you disagree with him. You know, it's like, but that's not a critique, you know? You know, it's like, I disagree with some things John says. I disagree with them when we're on the show, but that doesn't mean his point of view isn't valid or interesting or shouldn't be listened to, or, you know, so many times, like when they call John on both sides and that kind of stuff, say, well, you just disagree with how he's viewing things. That's
right.
Okay. But what about the actual content? You know, is the content valid?
Right. what's your thought on the content of what he's saying?
Right. Because many times they'll have an agenda, because if their agenda is, you know, they want somebody to be elected, how dare you do anything to get in the way of that? Well, that's what you're trying to do.
Right. That's your agenda. It's not mine.
That's not his agenda.
Right.
His agenda is different than yours. You know, people think that these comedy shows have the magic ability to get people elected or sway elections. If only, Michael, if only, you know, I don't think, if you asked John, and I can't speak for him, but if you said, are you doing this show to get Biden elected? What do you think he's going to say?
Oh, he'd probably cuss you out.
He's going to say, motherfucker, absolutely not. You know,
yeah,
are you kidding me? That's not, he doesn't work for the DNC.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, because they're not that funny.
None of them are funny.
they're not that funny.
Now,
we're less funny on my side.
Now, John certainly is a liberal, and I'm sure he'd like to see them be elected, and he's going to point out, you know, he wants that to happen, but the purpose of a show is not that, you know, because John has more integrity than just that. That's not what he's trying to do in his show. So sometimes you may, like I used to say this to people, I said, one of the reasons why I called myself a passionate centrist, I said, because sometimes I'll disagree with myself, you know?
Well, Larry, that's an excellent point to make, because I don't think people really appreciate that's part of the evolution of the mind and the soul, meaning the things you think about and the things you care about.
Right.
Because the reality is, if you don't have that evolution, if you don't challenge your own thinking,
right,
you begin to sound like a lot of the numbnuts on my side.
The first step to learning is acknowledging that you don't know.
Bingo.
You know,
bingo.
And that there is a possibility you may be wrong about something.
And it may just be a little small one.
Might be wrong. How do I fix being wrong? Start listening is be one thing. You know, consider another opinion. What is open-minded? What does that really mean?
What does that mean? Yeah, and it's funny because for me, as someone who has, you know, been a public official and groomed a lot of public officials, advised them, the one thing I always tell them, it really steps into what you're saying, is first off, you've got to be open about what's going around you. My mama put it this way, just shut up and listen. That's what she always used to tell them, just shut up and listen. But the other thing I would tell, and I still do, tell young candidates to be, and those, even some more senior ones, is go to the bathroom and stand in front of the mirror and talk to the person in front of you and listen to what they say. And if you're not grounded in the belief of those words and sort of coming to grips with what they mean, just go sit on the toilet and work it out. And then, and then before you come out into the world and think you're going to represent me or represent a community of people or represent a country, we don't want you to bring your ish and figure that stuff out on our watch. We want you to at least have some bearing as to who you are. And it really does go to the heart of, you know, what you were saying there is that you've got to be open.
Right.
So learning more about yourself and take that occasional trip to the bathroom and have a conversation.
And Michael, two things can be true at one time. You can acknowledge something isn't perfect, but still be for it. You know, like, for instance, we can acknowledge that Biden is old. I would argue too old.
Right.
You know, and has slowed down a lot, you know, and we have concerns about his cognitive ability maybe to be president. And on the other side, he's running against a treasonous, kind of dumb rapist, you know. That's
hello.
And if I were for Trump, I would be forced to say, well, it's okay that he's a rapist and tried to overturn the government. I'm cool with that, you know, but
right.
But here's what I like, as opposed to, no, he didn't do that. I think you need to acknowledge that. So
yeah.
if I were voting for Trump, I would have to say, yeah, I guess I'm okay that he's that and that because I like these policies. Thank
right.
God. I don't have that dilemma. I would, but I don't mind It doesn't threaten me if somebody says Biden's too old. Like, how dare you say you can't say that? It's the truth.
It's the truth. It's the
Stop
truth.
It. It is the truth. The best thing that Biden could have done, in my estimation, was last summer say, guys, I wanted to come in here, get us back on the right track, shake things up, but I'm opening the door to the youth of this party. I want, you know, I think there's a whole new generation that, you know, needs to have a shot at this, whether it's my vice president or other people on deck. I don't care who it is. I'll support whoever the winner is, but I'm doing that right now. Do you know how popular he would be? He would be so popular right now. Yeah. Like, there would be a fire under whoever that candidate is right now. The thing that, I didn't mean to go off on this tangent, but this is what kills me. The thing that the Democrats are missing right now is fire under their candidate, you know? And ironically, the treasonous rapist has fire under him. You know, people feel like that election was stolen from Trump the last time. There's, you know, and they really like him a lot, you know, and the people who are going to be voting for Trump have energy. Then all the Biden energy is still kind of anti-Trump, but it's not as strong anti-Trump as it was the last time. You know,
yeah, no, so that's a good point.
Democrats have a lot of big issues now.
There are a lot of big issues, you know, and I agree with you about what could have happened last summer or probably should have happened last summer.
Opportunity missed.
Opportunity missed. But, you know, at the same time, you know, short of having a real good reason, I've never known anyone to walk away from the presidency. And so you don't
Except LBJ, who we mentioned earlier.
But he had a real good reason.
Yeah.
He had a real good reason, and that's because he'd lost enough of his base to know that he couldn't go forward. And that's because, you know, the Republicans weren't as manic as they are now. And that, I think that's the thing, to your point, kind of holds most of that still in place for Biden. And he leveraged into that, quite honestly. And so now you're at this point where here you are. And my attitude is, okay, give me the 81-year-old guy who may be a little bit slow, but at least he's not planning to use the Constitution as a roll of toilet paper.
Right.
And
I also think it's not our job to do this for him. He needs to reach out to people, like especially to the youth.
Yeah,
the left youth of the country, and be a leader in getting them on board, and not just leave it up to us to do all the work to say, "Oh no, he's okay, you guys." You know,
right?
It's like,
right.
What happened to your job in this? You know, how come you're not reaching out to us?
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, and so I would, before I let you go, I want to touch on something that I thought was important that you said, and it really leans into the point you just made. You had an opportunity to speak to the class for 2023 and you last year.
At Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you made the point to them, quote, "Fear is usually the culprit that prevents us from doing the things in life that we are meant to do, but are afraid to do for whatever reason. Though it can come from anywhere, the most paralyzing type of fear always starts inside of us." I thought that speaks to what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, even as someone at Biden's age can be paralyzed by that fear of walking away, fear of giving up on this moment, transitioning authority and power to someone else, or in the case of the next generation, fear that they're not ready, fear that they're not capable, fear that they're not the person that they want to be. And I just think, talk a little bit about the lesson that you wanted to impart to them, and that, you know, those listening should take away from addressing and being honest about those fears.
Well, fear can come in many forms. There could be different things that you're afraid of. Let me project something that I used to be afraid of that I think I can relate to Joe Biden on. And this is going to be surprising to some people. So one of the interesting things that Joe Biden acknowledged, and I don't remember when, was that he was a stutterer, you know, for most of his life, you know. And I had a bad problem when I was a kid from stuttering. I remember I'm a mimic, and there was a kid who stuttered. And I couldn't stop mimicking him, but then it became my problem. And I was always self-conscious about it. And there were certain sentences I couldn't start sometimes if they had certain vowels or that type of thing,
right,
or certain words I'd get stuck on. And I'd be very embarrassed in public sometimes trying to say certain things. And then I just wouldn't say anything, or I'd have to choose a different word. I'd get stuck in the middle of something. I was very self-conscious about it. You know, even to this day, it flashes through my mind when I'm stuck on certain words. I think Joe Biden has a fear of public speaking that relates to his stuttering. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think many of the issues that he has, and if you watch him carefully, I see it because I know what it is. It's starting sentences, and it's a physical thing,
yep.
not a cognitive thing.
Yep.
And I think if he was more honest about that and really talk to people about it, because it allows us to get into him a little more. It says, guys, look, I have a problem with words sometimes. You know, I get stuck, you know, and talk to us about that problem, because it's a very human issue and we could really relate to it. And then when you see him, here's how you're changing the narrative. He's talking about a fear that he has, you know, he's addressing it to us. We can relate to it because many people have done it. Even if we can't, we are relating to him as a person. When he would stumble or have that thing, we know what it is.
Right.
We're not making things up in our head about he's stupid. He's senile. He's not. No, you know what? It's not easy for him to, you know, have certain words fall together sometimes or start certain things. And sometimes you have to replace words. When you're a stutterer, sometimes you have to replace words that aren't necessarily the best word for the word that you want to say.
Right.
You know, I'm not giving him this an excuse on that, but I can recognize some of those things when I see him talking because I've gone through it. And I know it's a fear that you have. Not like, you know, big fear, but it's one of those things that it kind of haunts you your whole life because you're just self-conscious about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember when he talked about that, I was so happy he brought it up, you know? And I remember seeing things online about people who had the same issue and they were discussing it. And I was like, wow, this is powerful, you know? Talk about the things that you're vulnerable about, the things that are hard for you to do. Because the way to really attack your fears, you have to go straight at them and kind of put sunlight on them, you know, and you have to take the power away from those things that you're afraid of. Now, when I'm speaking to the students, a lot of those things are their future, you know, the things that they have to go after. And some of the fears are about those types of things. And, you know, I talked about that summer when I had to knock on doors, and the way to get over the fear of knocking on a door, I was selling books over the door, was to actually knock on the door. Yeah. It wasn't going sitting on the couch having psychology, talking to a psychiatrist.
Right.
It was an action.
Right.
So actions are very powerful, you know. And the action of sharing your fear with people many times can open you up to having a better relationship with that thing, because it's never going to go away. But it's your relationship with it that is the thing that gives you the power over it.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Facepalm America is a show for progressives and others on the left who want to keep up with the ridiculousness that this country dishes out. Find out what cable news misses when they're waiting for Trump to appear at a podium. And also, every once in a while, get a laugh at how silly this hot mess of a nation of ours really is. If that's you, listen to Facepalm America. You can go to facepalmamerica.com or find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.